sector that we don't really have ties to or really have hands-on experience with. But from the university perspective of future farmers, we do a really good job at explaining like how this plant can be processed, how you can enter this industry, and how you can actually make a difference and impact. And so for people who are like, you know, trying to pick at it like, hey, you know, I'm kind of interested in the hemp industry, but I don't know where to start or anything. The first things we're going to start listing is our issues that are in industry that we would...
Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
Thank you so much for joining. Thank you, everybody else, for joining. Please let us know where you're coming in from. Mohammed, I see you. Marcelo, thank you so much for saying hello. Clay, I'm thrilled about this conversation and everything that you're doing. And I have to ask you, tell me how you got into this and what really drove your passion to say hemp is where I want to study and where I'm going to focus in school.
Well, so currently at Texas A&M University, right now we are doing cannabinoid research, but it's mainly grain and fiber research. But the way I got started was in high school. I had a lot of friends and family members that struggled with harder drug abuse and things like that. And so I got really, really deep into cannabis research and how cannabinoids can help certain people with certain issues that they're dealing with. It could be way better alternatives to the drugs that they're currently taking. And then I basically started in Kingsville A&M my freshman year of college, and I got a really cool internship that was studying hemp over the summer at an extension in Corpus Christi. And I did so well taking care of the hemp plants out there that I actually met my current boss out there, and he hired me right out of the field whenever he found out I got accepted to Texas A&M. So here I am.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so I want to dive into everything you're doing. You guys, you've got lots going on, but I want to say too, like, how exciting to be at the forefront of this. And talk to me about what your peers, what's your peers' opinion, and what challenges or opportunities opened up because we're specifically focused.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here at the forefront. All of my peers are really excited about the positions that they're currently in here in the industrial hemp breeding program. But basically, we've all got our own projects that are all novel in their own ways that we're looking on how to help farmers, indoor growers, and greenhouse growers. And we love to work with everyone. We don't like to keep secrets or anything. We just kind of we like to merge with everyone. So
that's awesome. Awesome. Lots of people are logging in. Facebook is saying Facebook users. So whoever you are, let us know. We'd love to say hello. Amy, thank you very much for saying hello as well. Clay, tell me what this industrial hemp breeding program looks like. What does it mean for the industry? What does it mean for farmers and supply chain development?
Yeah. So, the Industrial Hemp Breeding Program is in the Department of Soil and Crop Sciences here at Texas A&M University. It started in 2020, whenever they greenlighted after the 2018 Farm Bill. We started off very slow doing field trials across Texas to see what varieties did very well. And then ever since after 2020 and starting in 2021, we actually started blowing up in other research aspects, anywhere from pesticides to fiber research on hempcrete, things on breeding to increase genetic diversity and all of that. Basically, we love to work with our local farmers. We are not extension, so you might hear Dr. Trossel a lot. He's an extension who likes to reach out to farmers everywhere. But we love for everyone to come to us with their questions because it's such a new plant in our field of study. So we love to just learn as much as possible. Through prohibition, there's been a lot of controversy with this plant and things like that. So we have to respect our legacy breeders and our legacy growers that have been in it underground for a long time because they're the ones who know the most. So,
okay. So when we talk about the fiber and grain trials, what varieties are you seeing that are successful in Texas, or and what specific region of the world are they coming from?
So there are some hemp varieties that are doing well in Texas that are made here in America, but there's also another one called USO 31 that actually came from Ukraine. But the main one that's being grown here in Texas is Cherry Wine. That's being grown a lot. I think that was developed in Colorado, I believe.
These are for cannabinoids, right?
Yes, USO 31 is for fiber, I believe, fiber and grain types. But there's also some that are coming from China that are Binma, Yuma, Han, and those are fiber and grain types as well. China is kind of the leader in fiber and grain right now for genetics.
Our genetic trial, our trials that we did, our Asian varieties killed it.
Like they just,
on multiple levels, right? The consistency, the seeds were the cleaner seeds. It just like... for a lot of reasons, we had a lot of consistency. Now, I understand, you know, there's a lot of question around certified and what certified means, not necessarily about what certified means, but what the value of it is to our farmers right now, you know, with the instability in the market. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like and where your program will benefit that?
So I think it'll bring a lot of like, IP and interest in actually getting approved varieties by USDA. I think a lot of people are backdoor breeding and they're just giving the seeds to their local farmers and things like that. And rather than going through the full process of getting it certified and knowing that it's stable and everything, running it through a university for trials and things like that. So I think having the university there as a kind of a backbone for this stabilization and this certification of the genetics is a very good staple to have in Texas and for hemp. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I just want to give a shout out to Kenda is who supplied our Asian genetics. They're very consistent or have been very consistent from us. I think that that's the biggest challenge is how do you know what you're going to get next year when they're not certified? And so trying to eliminate that. But I know there's been a lot of work done to stabilize genetics and also to start breeding here in the US. So yeah, I'm interested to hear. I'd love to actually look at some of these other genetics for the fiber and grain. We're going to be doing our trials next year. We didn't put seeds in the ground, or aren't putting seeds in the ground this year for our trials, unfortunately. But next year, as we get more genetics that are stabilizing in the US and available, right? I think the big thing is we've got a lot of great success, but it's not necessarily available for purchase. And so as that starts to develop, I'm curious. Okay, so what else do you have going on at the university? Talk to me about some of these other things you've got your hands in.
Yeah, so a project that I actually lead in our industrial hemp breeding program is called the Hemp Conversion Program. Basically, I'll reach out to growers and breeders, cultivators all around the world within a 30 degrees north and 30 degrees south latitude in legal countries to make a donation of pollen or seed to my public germplasm bank. This hemp conversion program was awarded a grant from USDA ARS. Basically, like I had mentioned, it's an open public source germplasm. So there is no holds that A&M has on any of the patents for these varieties. So farmers can come to us and take anything that's available. USDA released an approved list of over 100 different varieties that can be grown in the US, but only 8 of them are really commercially available and people know how to actually obtain. And so this hemp conversion program is adding to the diversity so that people can come to A&M and know exactly what they're going to be getting, it, whether it be a cannabinoid variety, a fiber variety, or a grain variety. And basically, one thing that's also kind of cool about the project is that I actually won the plant breeding symposium this year for the undergraduate division.
Yeah.
Chilling on my desk. But
nice.
This is the first year that hemp has actually won that. So that's a big accomplishment in the hemp
win.
So yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And then we have other students here. I'd like to introduce them as well. We have graduate student Ezekiel Soto that's doing inbred lines. We have Christopher Garcia that is doing tetraploids and triploid work. We have Joshua Van Dyke, who's doing nanocellulose and fiber work. We also have a graduate student named Thasia, who's from India, and she's doing heat and drought tolerant lines. And then we go to our undergraduates. We have Ian McGrath, who's actually making an organic pesticide made of terpenes. We also have undergraduate Meredith Clay, who's doing their research with microscopy of trichomes. And we also have me, who's doing the hemp conversion program. And then we have a couple other undergraduates that are going to be doing research this fall. So
I love this. Okay, well, I was just taking notes and sent them in private chat, so you can ignore them because I have a question. What are some of the key things that these programs, you specifically, but also on the trials, what are things you guys are looking at this year?
This year, mainly for Texas, it's a lot of what I mentioned with Thasia's project is the heat and drought tolerant, because Texas has some pretty harsh weathers for hemp. And so one of the things that we're really breeding for is that heat and drought tolerance that's adaptable for southern coastal hemp and things like that. Yeah. So really, we're just going to see what stays alive through the summer. Yeah. So and
we planted in Texas last year, and with the heat, we got like a heavy pelting rain. So it moved our plots all over. Right. And then it got to like 110 degrees. And so it formed a hard crust at the top, and four of the genetics came up. But like I said, they're pretty moved around, so we couldn't do stand counts or germination rates and things like that.
Yeah, and last year was kind of bad in the summer, like really bad. I think there was some kind of record that was broken on like drought wise, because we had no rain. Also, all of our fields were completely irrigated. We were out there almost like every other day running lots and lots of water being pulled from the Brazos River and things like that. So it was really bad. Even visiting my hometown down in Palacios, our pond and our property was all dried up. So really devastating. But we're hoping, we're fingers crossed that we have a good summer this year, a lot of rain. The weather, it was actually really chilly when I woke up this morning, and that's not normal for Texas in the end of April. So
yeah, that's it. Well, and it's interesting, right? It's feast or famine. It seems like last year we were in such bad drought, and now everybody's flooding, and it'll be interesting. I'm excited for the moisture, and so hopefully you guys get some of it. That'd be nice. Okay, so your germ plasma. Can you talk to me a little bit about, I not being somebody in the, you know, breeding and or agriculture sector or coming from that sector, talk to me a little bit about how it benefits supply chain and what specific things, you know, how does this work? How does a farmer get involved? Things like that.
Yeah, so a germplasm is a germplasm bank, where basically we will have a storage of a lot of different genetics and a lot of different genetics that we develop. And once we develop these seeds, we can get in touch with farmers to let them know, hey, we've got this new variety. If you're interested in growing a cannabinoid variety that's higher in CBD, or a cannabinoid variety that's higher than CBG, or you're interested in a grain type, or you're interested in a fiber type, or you're interested in a dual use grain and fiber type. It just depends on like the equipment that they have. That's another thing in the industry that it can really help, is that there's a lot of agricultural engineers that are getting into the space that are creating harvesters that can basically harvest the dual use crops. So basically it'll be like a combine with two arms, and it'll come through and it'll chop off the top part of the hemp plant, the grain side, and then it'll come back and chop off the fibers in the end. So that can help as well. But the germplasm is going to really help, because now we can hold genetics. Say there is a disease later down the line that takes out all of our hemp, just like Hoplitin viroid that's out in the West Coast that affected billions of dollars in production value. But basically, say that gets over here and affects all of our hemp fields. Well, we'll have that germplasm bank to hold onto those seeds so that we can actually start doing research and testing and finding a resistance, or maybe do some genetic editing to have a resistance towards those diseases and things like that. So that can help the supply chain. But mainly, all we're going to be doing is developing lines and then increasing seed so that we can get that seed to the farmers. And like I had mentioned, it was an open public source. So A&M doesn't hold any ties to it. Farmers are more than welcome to come to us and ask for seeds. So
that's impressive. Well, okay. So I wanted to talk about that. The way that the industry is right now and the cost of seeds for farmers, even industrial seeds, speaking only, I guess, about industrial seeds, because the cannabinoids are very differently priced or priced differently, right? $4 a pound is a lot of money for the number of seeds we're needing with the sowing densities we're seeing. Definitely. Where does this program really help like eliminate or reduce cost to farmers, that barrier of entry?
So we don't really have an effect on reducing the cost when we provide the genetics. I think that's more of a marketing issue of actual like businesses that need to be developed to drive those costs down. So one of the biggest things is having like decorticating facilities, like refineries, so that people can have their fibers, their their plants to send somewhere here in Texas. And that's one of the biggest issues is like when they first greenlighted the hemp program here in the US and Texas started jumping on it. And a lot of farmers are like, oh, I'm going to get rich quick. I'm going to grow all this hemp and get rich. Well, for 3 years after, they still had material just sitting in their barn, getting all moldy because they didn't have anywhere to send it to get processed, or any dispensaries that wanted to buy their, you know, crappy flour or anything like that. So, but yeah, there's a big issue in that sector that we don't really have ties to or really have hands-on experience with. But from the university perspective of future farmers, we do a really good job at explaining like how this plant can be processed, how you can enter this industry, and how you can actually make a difference and impact. And so for people who are like, you know, trying to pick at it like, hey, you know, I'm kind of interested in the hemp industry, but I don't know where to start or anything. The first things we're going to start listing is our issues that are in industry that would help towards making it a better thing. But from an aspect of driving costs down, that's not really like our sector. We tell that we like to educate people on how they can help make the prices go down for everything. So.
Sure. I look at this as an opportunity, right? The more genetics we have, the more production we have, the more volume is, you know, we get, the lower cost goes down. And so I think that the more opportunity we have for people to access stable genetics, right, in entering into breeding programs. Now, can you talk to me a little bit about where the breeding program, say somebody contacts me and it says, hey, I've got experience in cotton breeding, and I'd like to get involved in the hemp industry or start to transition because we're seeing so many challenges in cotton. What does that look like, and where does this benefit that, you know, next piece, and or where do we send those people as the, you know, opportunities open up?
Yeah. So one of the cool things that we actually do in our hemp program is that there's not a lot of research and academic books that have been certified so that the university can actually use them in classes and things like that. There are a lot of books out there, but it's hard to tell what's right, what's wrong, and like who knows more than the other person. But one of the things that we actually do is we like to steal a lot of agricultural practices from other crops to help the hemp plants. And so like one of the things we do from corn, if you look out at a row of corn or sorghum or a lot of other varieties that have been grown that are very stable, it's uniform straight across. If you look out at a field of hemp, you know there's going to be a lot of variation in sizes and yields and things like that. Well, one of the agricultural practices that is used in corn is called inbreeding, and that's a project that Ezekiel Soto, PhD student Ezekiel Soto, is working on inbreeding hemp so that we can have genetic uniformity, so it grows up the exact same, yields the exact same CBD or CBG content, or yields the same fiber lengths, or yields the same amount of grain per every plant, and is the exact same height. So that's something that we're kind of looking into. Not much on cotton. The thing is with cotton is that when it produces its boll and it has its flower, that's pure cellulose. So you can't really get finer material than just that pure cellulose. Mm-hmm. So when we're looking at the hemp plants and we're taking from the fibers in there, what I was going to mention is that I don't think that we will ever really have a 100% hemp clothing that's comfortable. And it might be comfortable to other people. That's very suggestive. But for me, I think it's very rough. And I think that the market will probably always be a mixture of cotton and hemp fibers together to make clothing materials. So.
Sure. Well, and there's definitely different applications, right? We're seeing.
Oh, absolutely.
Another thing that I learned that was really interesting. Are you familiar with GOTS? The Global Organic Textile Standards?
No, I'm not.
They're recognized all over the world in textiles, really to give assurance to the buyer and the manufacturer that from farm to end product, you know, they are organic certified. And they've got all of these inspectors that go out to facilities to make sure that they're meeting the 17 sustainability goals for the UN, but a great group, right? But she was saying because of the capabilities that hemp has, it actually, as a blend, allows for the organic certified certification, basically the GOTS certification, mm-hmm. As a blend, easier than 100% organic cotton or things like that. So it can actually be used, substituted. And it is really being looked at on a global scale, she said, mm-hmm. as far as standards because of its impact. And so it was just cool to hear from the standards perspective of an established organization on the textile side that, like, hemp shit, you guys, like,
yeah, definitely. And I'm all for, like, getting rid of plastics as much as like polyester and things like that. If we can make all of our clothing out of just cotton, out of hemp,
natural fibers,
starting. Yeah, exactly. Natural fibers. And there's a lot of, like, research now that's going into, like, bioplastics. My professor, my boss, Dr. Russell Jessup, who runs the Industrial Hemp Breeding Program, actually teaches a class on bioproducts, and he teaches everyone how to make composites and how to actually make the bioplastics. So that's something that the future of these students who are wanting to get into hemp, like I was mentioning before, all we can do is really teach you the issues that are in the industry right now. So if we can teach you how to make plastics out of hemp that are way better than the actual plastics that are being made currently to be replaced with those bioplastics, then maybe they'll go into the industry and want to start their own bioplastics company, because there's a lot of people that are using it and making a PLA filament for 3D printing out of it as well to make little things like sunglasses. I don't have mine on me right now, but actually have some grow light sunglasses that I got at NOCO this past year. So.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yes. That's my favorite part. I live in Utah, and there's a 3D plastics printing group, and they do all kinds of things like gun holsters and cell phone cases and pens for the desks. And I was like, you guys, we need a facility right next to yours and just move right into this, you know, biocomposite or opportunities. And so I'm working on it very diligently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk to me a little bit about, I forgot what I was going to ask you, something about the biocomposites.
I mean, about the biocomposites, like I was mentioning we have a course here called bioproducts. So he'll make anything where it's bioplastics, or he can actually make gunpowder out of hemp, which is super interesting. We just make a ton of things out of hemp that you wouldn't think that you can actually make out of, which also kind of strings back towards, we use other crops as examples of how we can mimic it in hemp. So.
Okay, so where do you think in Texas the opportunity is to really drive industry? You know, right now we're really pushing this ball up the hill. What's going to get us on the other side and start pulling market and pulling industry?
Definitely decorticating and processing of fibers. We need refineries to actually have farmers be able to send their material to large refineries to process all of this hemp. Because one of the things in Texas, construction is really growing in the hempcrete industry. They're making all these houses in San Antonio out of hemp blocks and things like that. But one of the things is, if we want one of these big construction companies behind it to do mass production, we need huge refineries to be able to process tons and tons and tons of hemp to be able to make into hempcrete blocks. So
do you think that construction, or say hempcrete blocks, is going to has a profit margin and an adaptability or acceptability fast enough to pull the market? Or do you think it's going to be something like a biofuel or a plastic automotive industry? What are you seeing in Texas as opportunity? Who's coming to your university and saying, listen, we want to get behind this?
So there's the Global Fiber Processors group, and then with Ray, and then there's another group with Lucas Evans, who's in charge of making hemp rebar and things that of the sorts. There's a big issue. It's really expensive to make a house out of hemp currently, very expensive, just because there's, like I said, there's not huge processing facilities and whatnot to drive those costs down and things like that. But the way it's shaping up, I really believe Texas is going to be a leader in the hemp construction area, because I have not really met a lot of people from other states. Even at the NOCO, there was a couple of people from other states that were really into the hempcrete, hemp block making and everything. But I mean, I'm a little biased, but also here in Texas, I've met like 10 different companies that are getting into this hemp block, and they all have their own different formulations and things like that to make the hemp blocks. There's even a company that started their own course on how to teach everyone how to make hemp blocks so they can start their own construction and things like that. So
that's the next level, right? Now we've got this concept, right? We're no longer talking about what can be made. Now it's how, and how do we scale, and what does that look like, and what has
absolutely. And you can see too, NoCo being like the largest hemp expo in the United States of America every year. You can tell by the way it shifted from last year to this year. Last year, it was about 60% alternative cannabinoids like Delta 8 and D10 and some other ones. And then it was like CBD shops, CBG shops, CBN shops, and things like that. And then it was like 30 to 40% hemp construction. Well, now you look this year at NoCo, it was like 80% hemp construction. Everyone was jumping into this hemp construction area. There are still shops here and there, but everyone is really interested in the fibers and how we can actually build our houses out of it. So,
isn't it rewarding? For me, it's so rewarding. Like when I got into this, I'm sure everybody who's been on here has heard this a dozen times, but I'm going to tell you because it's like, I just remember sitting at the edge of my booth at NoCo and thinking like, we have this plastics problem that is staring us in the face. And we know now that hemp can be a solution, and all of us are ignoring it and talking about something else. I was like, well, what are we doing? What's this? So I dove in head first to the fiber and grain market and was like waving my flag, but understanding that it is not, we cannot go out and promise our farmers $40,000 or $10,000 an acre on this. Yep. It is a traditional agriculture crop, right? Mm-hmm. We're looking at a commodity.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
It's pretty exciting. Okay. So you have been to a couple of events lately, not only NoCo, but you were over at EarthX. Tell me a little bit how that was and what'd you learn?
Apparently that the EarthX conference has been around for a while, and I didn't really know much about it until just this year when Dalton O'Neill hooked the A&M team up with some tickets to go out there and network a little bit and see the hemp side of things. It was a really interesting, really great conference. There was a lot of like just really earthy people, even from outside of hemp, people who were just giving people trees. Like literally people had like little tiny stem trees that they were just giving to people to like, hey, go plant this, plant this. And then there was also a bunch of people giving away like fruits and vegetable plants and things like that. And then there was a lot of like clean energy people there, solar energy. And then there was a huge hemp block that was in the corner of a building for the conference. CBD Pros was there. The global fiber processing people were there. We had a lot of speakers in the hemp industry go there. Even Sid Miller, our agricultural commissioner, was there to speak with the Texas Hemp Coalition on stage. And so there's definitely a lot of interest. If you're looking in that room and you see that there's all of these, you know, clean energy, there is a bunch of solar, there's a bunch of just everything around, but then there's a whole area dedicated to hemp. That shows you something, that there's a lot more interest in hemp than any of the other agricultural crops that are going on right now. And so I think that's only a matter of time before hemp starts taking even more space up that people are going to be interested in. So
that's right where it belongs.
That's right.
It is at the forefront. If people are aware of hemp's capability and they have any concern about, you know, the sustainability goals or the impact that it has on the planet or the carbon footprint that we're facing, right? It really is at the forefront of conversation.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. There's another thing I kind of wanted to talk about at Texas A&M that we started. Ian McGrath, Meredith Clay, and I, we all founded this student organization called the Cannabis Hemp Innovation League here at Texas A&M. We're a fully recognized and approved student organization under Texas A&M University. We've gotten a lot of great sponsorships from industry leaders such as Orange Photonics, Rare Earth Genomics. We've also got Texas Hemp Reporter. We've also got CBD Pros as well. And they've all sponsored us a little bit of money. We had over 74. This is our first academic school year. So this is the end of the academic school year for this spring. We started last fall. And basically, we collected over 74 active students, paid members to be a part of our student organization. And then we had over 600 students in attendance over all 14 meetings that we had over the semester. We also had a field trip to a local greenhouse down in Giddings, Texas, 4K Farm, Taylor Kirk. And basically, we went there and we planted in hemp clones into raised beds. And we're going to go back next month, May 13th, to actually harvest the whole greenhouse. So it shows our members and students what a full life of a hemp plant looks like. So from clone to harvest, basically. We also gave away over $5,000 in scholarships over the past two semesters, which looks really good for the hemp industry, because we're mainly focused on research and academia behind hemp and the activism behind it as well. We're also working on a decriminalization bill right here in College Station. There's over 450 people that are arrested every year annually, and that includes students as well. So we're basically trying to decriminalize to protect our students from drastic changes in their life or careers from just possession of a small plant. So we're working on that as well. We're also trying to expand into more universities. We have four universities in mind, University of Texas, Texas Tech, Texas State, and UNT in Dallas. And once we expand to those, we hope to go national level and start expanding to other universities. But basically, it's so that we can create this coalition of students to actually focus on changing the future with the people who want to get in the hemp space. So they have a place to go, and we're going to teach them as much as possible about the plant, about the things that they can make out of the plant, things that they can get into the industry. And also, what I forgot to mention is that in our first two meetings, so our meeting in the fall and our first meeting in the spring, we had over 100 students in attendance, and we took a survey. In each meeting, we had over 50 different majors in diversity. So to show you that we have interest from everywhere, we had neuroscientists, we had engineers, we had pre-med, we had nursing, we had agriculture, horticulture, chemistry. They're all interested in this plant and how they can have an effect in it, even business and marketing. And so we've been trying to show everyone that they have a place, whether it be from the plant perspective, chemistry, medical, even business-wise, how like there's a lack in marketing and like yes. there's a lack in social media and things like that that needs to take
banking,
over.
Financing.
Financing, absolutely.
Hemp, I've often compared to the tech space, right? It is the only or one of the only things that will touch every facet of our life from, like I said, the roof over our head, everything. It'll be in our cell phone cases. It'll be in the lotion we rub on our bodies. And it's always funny to me too, when we talk about who's consuming cannabis and the awareness that hemp lotion or hemp, you know, oils or hemp granola bar is still the cannabis plant. And so it's this disconnect. And now we're starting to gain more awareness, and it's pretty exciting. So what challenges are you excited about taking on? You know, you've got this diverse team doing a lot of exciting things, and, you know, coming up, what are you really excited about diving in and tackling?
Well, so we're really focused in the hemp area, and we're interested in cannabis as a whole. So we're tackling the grain and fiber side because we can. We're very much allowed to do everything in that aspect. There's no restrictions on any of that. But more on the cannabis side, or on the cannabinoid side, all we can really do is study the cannabinoids that are coming through the genetics, but we can't really use them for application or anything like that. And so basically what we're trying to do, actually tomorrow is the deadline for the medical cannabis teacup licenses for businesses who want to start medical programs here in Texas. They originally awarded three in 2019, I believe, and only two of the businesses actually did anything with their companies, Texas Original and Good Blend. This year, they're thinking of releasing up to 5 to 8, but in reality, a lot of companies are thinking they're only going to release another 3 or 5. And so basically what we as a university really want to do is partner with a medical cannabis company so that we can have a joint program where we can actually do research and clinical trials with the College of Medicine here at Texas A&M University as well. So that might be a struggle that we're going to have to deal with. But as a university, we're not profiting anything off of patients. It's completely just for everyone's facts and research. So
I love this. Well, and we're part of the benefit. Talk to me about our benefit of the education and the public sector. Can you talk to me a little bit about where you see, you know, your organizations that you've created and are involved in really linking up with the public sector or private sector to move industry forward?
Absolutely. We're looking forward to turning CHILL into kind of like a national free, like a free access to all this hemp research, because we're only going to make a change if we allow everyone the information. If we keep it secret, it's always going to be privatized and everything. One of the things that we're working on at A&M, I guess would be more for like students and things like that, is that we're actually trying to work on making a hemp minor so that people can take up to 15 hours of hemp courses, whether it be the hemp bioproduct class. We have a hemp production class. We also want to start a medical program. So there's a doctor named Dr. Bridget Cole-Williams that's on a paper with me that we're currently writing. She's a famous cannabis doctor, and we wanted to see if she wanted to be an adjunct professor at A&M to teach a course remotely. And then there's two others. We need a business, and we wanted something like a greenhouse or indoor or outdoor cultivation.
Well, those are two very different, right? When we talk about hemp and we look at like production or harvesting of a fiber crop from a grain crop, from a, you know, especially cannabinoid, those are very different. Is there a designation, say I want to come in and get a minor, can I focus on fiber and grain, or is the minor all inclusive with the cannabinoids as well?
It'll be probably all inclusive. It'll probably be everything. But through CHILL, we will eventually make videos for free information on everything that can teach you exactly what you need to know, to where you're like, oh, I want to do grain research, and or like, I want to start a grain business. So we'll basically have like tabs where you can click on that, and it'll give you a bunch of videos on like what anything grain related. So like if you compare like 100 grams of salmon to 100 grams of hemp grain seed, you'll receive more protein, omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids in the hemp grain than you would in 100 grams of salmon. You know, just things like that, or like how to produce lots of seed, what genetics to grow and things like that. Or if you go to the fiber side, how to make plastics out of it, how to make hempcrete out of it, those sorts of things. And then cannabinoids education on medical purposes or for infusion, extractions, things like that. So
I totally want to enroll. I don't want to go back to school, I'll be honest. I'm not interested in the in sitting in class and having to be there for attendance, or more importantly, like having to study for a test. But I would love to sit in and audit a class. I'm motivated about certain topics that I'll learn it and I'll educate myself, but man, I don't want to have to stay up all night to study.
No, yeah, there won't be any. Yeah, I promise you, there won't be any test on the website. So no anxiety or anything like that. Well, it should just be free information. The only thing that we would probably charge on is that with our student organization meetings, we actually have something where you can go to chillclub.com. I would suggest not to purchase a membership yet, but purchase one in the fall, because we had our last meeting last Wednesday. But if you purchase an online non-student membership, you can actually tune in to all of our student meetings where we have guest speakers, we have fun activities that we have like giveaways for t-shirts, things of those sorts. So
I love this. That's awesome. Yes. Yeah. Yep. I see Karen Wilcox is listening, and if you are still on, hello, hello. But we need to wrap in what Clay's doing into the association, because this is what a great way to get people involved. And it is so rewarding watching the transition of students. I'm in Utah, like I said, where the acceptance of hemp has been really looped in with the THC, and you know, it's got a pretty ugly stigma still. And as I get capstone projects going and watch like these light bulbs go off with students, it is extremely rewarding. So Clay, congratulations and thanks for your work, because it's really what's going to move the industry forward, right? We get these students excited about opportunity to make change around things that they're, you know, that are important to them.
Another thing to show you like how innovative and how important this hemp crop is turning into. I mean, they're awarding me things for the research that we've been doing, and they've been looking at our programs, and they've been giving us scholarships for our Cannabis Hemp Innovation League. I was awarded the Undergraduate Student Support Award. That's the highest undergraduate award that our soil and crop department can give out. So got that for hemp as well. But that's just to show you that like everyone is interested in our hemp research. So
yes. Well, it's a new crop. When will we ever have an opportunity to introduce a new crop to our rotation?
Exactly.
I don't believe it's going to happen. I think it would have already, right? Look, hemp isn't new. We're just new to it. It's not. It's pretty
exciting. Or there might be a new crop, but that it only does one thing, and that hemp is such a versatile and multi-use crop that, you know, we've only scratched the surface of what it can actually do. So
it's so cool. Okay, so if you could wave your magic wand outside of decortication, what does the industry need to move forward?
So to move forward, definitely destigmatizing it and stop being scared of a plant. That's one thing.
Education.
Education is huge. I think everything starts in education. Definitely don't jump into a business thinking that you're going to be successful right away. I've been told that by lots of business owners saying that like their first, you know, two to three years, even 5 years was a struggle. And it's a long game that you have to play. Keep being an advocate of hemp and legalization of cannabis everywhere. But mainly it's the education aspect, because if you don't educate yourself before you start anything, you're not going to get very far. And you're also not going to help the industry. You might end up actually hurting it if you don't do the correct research. So.
Sure. Okay. So I want to jump back. I know we kind of circled around, but I want to jump back to the breeding program and what genetics, you know, we may be looking for, I know we talked about drought tolerance. What other things are you seeing industry, right? What are our companies needing? Is it?
So there's something that we're trying to work on currently. There's different types of cannabis. So there's different chemotypes, type one being your marijuana, type twos through three and four being your CBD to THC varieties, and then like your hemp varieties. But then there's a type five that means no cannabinoids that are in the hemp genetics. And so one of the big things is farmers' crops being really hot. And I know there's some bills going around right now where they're actually making it to where if the farmer is growing for fiber or grain, where they'll be protected if their material goes hot or whatnot, because they're not using it for cannabinoids, they're using it for fiber and grain. So they shouldn't have to cut down their whole crop if one of their plants goes over 0.35%.
Well, and cannabinoids at that point, this is why I kind of brought up the topic earlier today about like harvesting techniques and do I need to study cannabinoids? Because really at that point, cannabinoids are a contaminant in the grain, right? And so, yeah, I'm all about the hemp exemption. I'll actually share the link, and I appreciate you talking about it.
Yeah, so within the type five, and I think Cornell University is also doing some research on it. And we heard that actually that they found out that the type five may be zero cannabinoid, but there's also some links to where the plant itself will lose pest resistance. So there's some levels of cannabinoids that have a phytotoxicity level against certain pests that kills the pest. But now there's a lot of chewing bugs that are eating up those type five crops without having any repercussions whatsoever. And so one of the things is that we've also learned is that terpenes, which Ian McGrath, our undergraduate student, researching in terpene pesticide, that there might be some certain terpenes that either will deter pest or actually kill the pest. So if we can get those type fives and mix them in with certain terpene groups, breed for those certain terpene groups and percentages, that we actually might have a viable no cannabinoid and pest resistant crop. So for fiber and grain, which would be huge.
Shout out to the group over at Cornell. Daniela is amazing. I've talked to her quite a bit. She's got lots of experience coming in from Colorado over there. Mm-hmm. And
There's a book they just got done writing. It was from the extension. And I really want myself a copy somehow. I'll figure out some way. But it's really interesting. It's what we need. It's the education that we need, that everyone needs. And you know that it's coming from a university such as Cornell. Or, you know, I would love to write a book for A&M or work with a couple of professors, because, you know, that kind of research is critical to. And the anatomy and what can come out of it is very critical. How to grow your plants, that's very critical, you know, so.
Yes. I was just going to pull up a link and share it. It will be, there's a link to it or a link to where to access it on our webpage under our resources tab. So yes, I love seeing stuff like that come out, and I'm just proud of that team and everything they've done. Did you get a chance to talk to everybody that was there at NoCo?
I got to talk with Larry Smart, because I did have an interest of maybe potentially doing graduate school work there. But I'm also very interested in doing it here at Texas A&M. And Larry Smart has a very great program going on there as well. Let me tell
you, Texas will be sad to lose you. I'm sure of it. So Yes, just know, well, you'll get people reaching out, I'm sure, as the industry expands. So it's pretty.
Yeah, exciting. Yeah. I'm not sure what I want to do just yet, but I'm sure that it'll be in a good area. I'll be where exactly I need to be. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I ask? Have you thought, or what are your thoughts about what piece of this supply chain will it be? You know, are you more interested at the farm level and seed, you know, production or genetics production? Are you looking at?
Yeah, so there's a couple of people that are trying to apply for this teacup license, and one of the companies specifically, I won't name them, but they are unique in a way because they are trying to get into the medical cannabis side, but also do hemp at the same time. So that kind of makes them unique from just the people who want to do just medical cannabis. So that it shows that they're doing they're covering the whole industry, and so basically, if I could work for a company like that on the hemp breeding side for fiber and grain types, and also do genetics work for medical cannabis patients, I would love to do that. That's where my goal would be, my end goal. And it's here in Texas, which is most important because I don't really want to leave Texas. I'm an 8th generation Texan, so my roots run deep.
Yes, they do. That's what I mean. You can always go for school and come back, right? Bring their
knowledge. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Too, but I am sure that Texas will be sad if you leave. Like, I know the industry in Texas will be disappointed to see you go somewhere else, but it'll be great. What can we do for you? What can the industry or anybody that's listening or hears this later on, you know, who fits into that box of someone you're looking to connect with that could really support you?
Well, for me, the support I want is to see this industry just blow up. I don't want any personal support. The only support, maybe we're looking for more sponsors for the Cannabis Hemp Innovation League. And so that money drives to increase the size of our capacity of our, you know, like our facilities and our teaching and like equipment for making the videos, our websites, scholarships, any of those sorts, because I like getting a lot of money and giving it right back to the students, or getting a lot of money and putting it right back into the industry in an area that'll, you know, expand. And so that money might actually help our program expand to different universities as well, pay for field trips, food, things of those natures, because it's very important that our generation is the generation that gets to learn about all of this stuff and actually move into the space and be able to, you know, hit fiber and make it into something great, hit grain, make it into something great, and even, you know, maybe even cure cancer with cannabinoids. Who knows? So,
right. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I like your, how politically correct you were at your statements. That was very good. I'm excited about it, and you couldn't have said it better. I think that I've said for a long time, and once we're able to get raw material into the hands of you kids and generation, you know, younger than yours, then we'll see a major impact. I mean, like I said, you guys are going to change the world with it. And so it's pretty exciting.
I really hope so.
I have no doubt. Like, I'd love to see it. And already we're seeing so many cool things. What is, out of all the innovation you've seen, what's something that excites you the most? Like what was like that's really being done?
I guess like drink infusion is really cool to me, and like food infusions and things like that. If we can start adding hemp into our everyday foods and things like that, there's so many benefits from whether it be the seed perspective or even the cannabinoid perspective. Mm-hmm. And there's even there, I would personally say that, drink infusions such as, there's a new brand called Taos Tonic from Taos Hemp here in Texas, and they make a tonic water that is a CBD to THC ratio of, I think it's a 1-to-4 ratio, I believe, of 5 milligrams of THC, very small milligrams to a higher CBD ratio. Yeah. But something like that, you can equivalent that to like a beer, but it would probably be way better for you than, you know, consuming all of that alcohol. So if we can steer more towards cannabinoid, where it's less impactful on your body because we have endocannabinoid systems to be able to process all those cannabinoids. Yeah. The alcohol, which, you know, we're only killing our liver by drinking more and more of that and getting fatter drinking those beers. But infusions and then food as well. I know a lot of people who have been putting hemp seed, like at NoCo, they had those hemp burgers. Those were good.
They were so good. Yeah.
And like hemp proteins. So like instead of using your natural whey proteins, you can be using the hemp seed to make natural proteins that way. So
Yeah. The food industry, as far as impact, like food scarcity and food security and what we can do on an international and global scale is, I'm excited to see.
Absolutely.
I cannot believe the impact we would make being able to bring a legitimate supply chain into Africa or, you know, some of these
third world. Oh, definitely. Yeah, third world countries that definitely need the help. They need the hemp.
Yeah, it's game changing. And especially when we're comparing it to things like rice.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know?
It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Well, Clay, I sure appreciate you. I'd love to have other people on your team in and on to talk, as you know.
Oh, definitely. And I'll let them know that they're more than welcome to reach out to you.
Please. I'll send you an email and just contact info. And then once this is edited and reshared, it'll be on our YouTube channel. So reminding everybody that's listening, go in and subscribe. There's something like 400 interviews. I need to go in and check how many we've had. We've taken a few down and added a bunch more, but something right around 400 interviews. And then they're also available on our websites, globalhempassociation.org and friendsofhemp.org. We, you know, like I said earlier, are not doing our seed trials this year, but will be next year. And so we're looking for partners and genetics and seeds, obviously on a national scale. So Clay, I would love to chat with you actually about our protocol and get a set of eyes from your perspective. There's a few other universities that have taken a look at what we're doing and really looking to scale.
My hemp conversion program, I'm releasing 15 brand new cultivars to be tested across Texas this summer. And then next year we're planning to release over 80. So hopefully we can hit those numbers.
I love it. So once we get those scaled up, I'd love to put them in trials, you know, and look see what they do everywhere else as well. So
absolutely. Yeah, awesome. Absolutely.
Well, thanks, Clay. I sure appreciate everything you're doing. Don't hesitate to reach out. Let's do this again, maybe in 6 months and see where you're at, what the program looks like. And then if there's anything I can do, like I said, yell at me. Okay, absolutely. Guys. Well, thank you so much for joining. We'll see you next week, same time. Check out our events on our Global Hemp Association website, and under our events tab, you'll be able to see upcoming interviews and who's on the schedule. Cool.
Well, thanks. A pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely, Clay. We'll talk soon. Have a good day. See ya.
You too. Bye.